You're listening to All the Best. I'm Michael Bryden. One of my favourite stories is the myth of Sisyphus. Basically, it's about this guy, Sisyphus, who's condemned by the gods to spend his life doing one thing. Push a rock to the top of the hill, let it fall to the bottom, and do it all again tomorrow. For eternity. Sound familiar? Okay, maybe not. Trade the rock for an email inbox? Throw in pay and sick leave? How about now? Thought so. Today's episode isn't about today, or yesterday, or tomorrow. It's about all of them. It's about every day. Pip Rasmussen and Millie McGrath decided to take a look at the repetitive life circuit of the modern day worker, who doesn't even come close to a boundary, let alone step over it.
Don't you hate it when your body clock wakes you up right before your alarm? And then you lie there waiting for it, because there's no use going back to sleep. Unless it's a Monday. From the moment I wake up, there's one thing on my mind.
Nutella.
I'm a very hygienic person.
Oh, shit.
But sometimes I forget to brush my teeth. I don't even need a nav man. I swear I could drive to the train station with my eyes closed. I like to drive to the train station with my windows down, but sometimes I get caught at the lights. Before I get started, I gotta have my coffee. Helps my brain boot up.
When's that fire gonna get done?
Whenever I'm ready, you ass face.
Why is it on time when I'm going to work, but late when I'm coming home? Stupid city rail. At the end of the day, everything that's happened goes down the drain. And then the next day, I do it all over again.
That story from All the Best's Pip Rasmussen and Millie McGrath. Good design is hard to find. It can make life easier or more beautiful. And really good design is when you don't notice it at all, when something just works. Gordon Leibowitz noticed good design in some pretty strange places.
In 2013, the City of Sydney released a draft public toilet strategy. With the goal of a public toilet within every 400 metres, a lot of new amenity blocks will be popping up all over Sydney. This won't exactly be a new trend, as over the past half decade, Sydney underwent what some have termed a toilet block renaissance. Examples of this toilet renaissance include firms like Las Nima Architects preserving views at Centennial Park, John Choi shading his users with seatbelts at Ballast Point, and Richard Lepasturier putting a tree in the middle of his open-plan toilet block at Middle Head. On Cockatoo Island, there is an amenities block designed by Conrad Johnson of Fox Johnston. Like any design, it started with an idea.
We sort of saw it more of as a bathhouse, so people, instead of just going to the toilet or, you know, going to a shower, it was sort of where people from the campground could go and have a shower and meet. And so what we were trying to do is make it not feel like a shower block as such.
Many people don't really consider design in regards to a toilet block.
I never thought about designing a toilet because, like, I would assume that they're a space that you don't often think about until you need them, right?
That's Tiger Webb, another producer for All the Best. I took him out to Cockatoo Island to see the amenities block. Having no investment in the design elements, he was able to focus solely on what's most important, the experience.
It must be very difficult with a space like this, whenever you're building anything on a very historic site, to make something that is going to be obviously new, but then kind of melding quite seamlessly. And we were walking around before, and I didn't really know where the bathrooms were going to be. If you hadn't pointed that out, I could have walked right past them. They do meld quite nicely into the existing environment. They seem at home among the rusted cranes and the...
Once Tiger knew where the structure was, we went for a closer look.
It basically has a kind of a roof that just slopes up at a kind of, I don't know, 30, 45 degree angle. And so in the afternoon, which is what it is right now, you've got the sun kind of entirely blocked out. And the structure sort of blocks the kind of incidental noise from the harbour. If you imagine like a sports stadium at night where they bring the roof over, that's kind of what they've done all the time here to this bathroom.
We make our way through the entrance to the toilet block, recorder in hand, garnering weird looks from people at the toilet block for its intended purpose.
The stalls, the cubicles, are kind of just this wooden door. I'm walking through one now. Now I'm in one. So you got like a shower in here, which is pretty rad actually. Little wooden bench. View, mirror, sink, all the mod cons. I mean, one thing that strikes me just looking around now is that these are really quite roomy. They're not at all claustrophobic. So, like, the space you actually have is quite wide. But then as well, that roof I mentioned is actually quite far away from you. It's not, you don't feel hemmed in at all. Which is nice, I guess. Because, you know, sometimes bathrooms can be a very claustrophobic experience.
It's great to be able to describe the toilet, but it's the experience of the use that's really important.
The experience is a common to everyone, designer or non-designer, so that's sort of, I suppose, where the commonality is. It's just a matter of the words, I suppose, you use differently. If you're involved in the design, you can actually dissect the experience and say, well, this is good because of this, this, this and that, whereas in some ways that doesn't necessarily matter. You know, you are standing there feeling the experience and that's fine, you don't really need to dissect it. The best thing, I suppose, which was our aim, was to sort of take it out of a sort of utilitarian sort of framework and put it more into a framework which was trying to embody the spirit of camping out there. So the type of building was a little bit more detailed and had more natural materials and so forth, and had the views out and the look up to the hills. So the whole experience of a shower there was meant to contribute to the experience of camping. So that those, and I think that works well, and the gathering space I think works well to create a sense of, rather than just going and sitting in an isolated shower block having your shower, there's each of the actual buildings are quite generous, and I can imagine that working with the families going over with their little kids, and that's how, when we used it, we all go over together and people share in the individual blocks, and then the whole experience is quite, is part of the camping.
So it's really serene. Just walking through that kind of stone on either side walkway into the actual like block of toilets itself. I don't know, I guess I would feel immediately calmed if I wasn't a guy walking around with a microphone looking at toilets and scaring Japanese tourists.
As in many cases for design, the parameters of the brief may change.
You know, you can kind of, if you stand up while in the bathroom, you can see the sort of rest of Cockatoo Island, and so maybe some people might feel exposed.
It was meant to keep the experience of camping by the seaside whilst you were in the shower as well, so it was sort of a continuation of the whole outside experience.
Oh, totally, because that is so camping, that ability to, like, you know, get up, you get out of your tent, you go and have a shower, and then you look out and you see the beautiful water and you see the other campers, and maybe you make awkward eye contact with them, and then you request that boards be put so that there's never a case where you're in the shower or bathroom and have to make eye contact with fellow campers, because that makes like camp jamborees way awkward. You are, even without meaning to, you're always going to have these issues of modesty, and it's that whole thing, like it's a space where you have to think about people's attitudes towards privacy, towards having their precious modesty preserved, may be different from your own, and may certainly be different from any kind of controlling interest.
There's a whole load of philosophy regarding the architectural image, which we're mostly going to skip over, except to say that there's a problem by which the way design is often presented.
People are very visual now in the way information is transmitted, and so there's a lot more photographs and CGI renders of architecture stuff that...
The trouble is that the images are often taken in a way that represents an idealized version of reality. Being photogenic doesn't indicate good design. A good experience does.
Well, I suppose it's about visiting it, I think, rather than just digesting it through images. And I suppose that that's when you maybe experience the level of complexity about what one does, you know, seeing how light works, how experience works, how touch works in the design. And so I suppose if you think that people should go and see the work, and I think there's a lot of these organisations where people do walkthroughs, like tours and stuff like that, I think they're really good. Rather than just sort of magazine.
Through visitation, you can get a full understanding of the design, which is why it was so important to take Tiger to the site.
I think bathrooms are really interesting because we don't want to think about them. They are, I mean, I don't know, maybe I'm not representative here, but I think they are just a really shameful place where, like, you don't, you know, you won't say, like, hey, I'm going to the bathroom. I mean, you're an American, right? Like, you guys say restroom. You rest in there. I'm just going for, like, you go and you have a nap in a hammock. You're not, you know... There's countless hours that go into making an experience that is a bit shameful or a bit, you know, icky, and making that experience like nice and lovely and comfortable for people. So now I am definitely going to keep my eyes open and ears when venturing into subsequent public bathrooms.
A great thing about the time we live in is the growing understanding of the components and importance of design.
It starts with the very simple thing like orientation. Like, I think a few years back people didn't know about orientation. Now people are educated to say that, I'm going to buy an apartment, it's going to be north facing, and I'd like some cross ventilation too, and, you know, all these key ingredients that form part of the experience, people are becoming to know how that they're put together. Yeah. And that kind of helps, I suppose.
Media and resources like Grand Design are doing great things for the dialogue between designers and non-designers. And it's great to see so many people taking an interest in design. Although, I really think Tiger sums it up best.
Well, that's the magic, isn't it? They're like, you never think about the things that we've been thinking about here. It just has to happen seamlessly without any kind of conscious thought from, I was going to say consumer, but I guess user is a more appropriate term of a shower or a toilet cubicle. I guess, I mean, design, it's one of those things, like, you probably only ever think about it a bit like translation, when it goes absolutely wrong. If something works perfectly, like if it has one of those Dyson Airblade things, I love those, and I want them everywhere. Yeah. And so I have a mental map in my brain of, like, public toilets that have the Airblade, because I love, that's the best way to dry your hands, obviously. But beyond that, I mean, yeah, I think it is a totally seamless experience, and that's probably exactly what you want, really.
That piece was produced by Gordon Leibowitz, with supervising producer Tiger Webb, who went beyond the usual SP call of duty in agreeing to be Gordon's toilet companion. Next up, Jess O'Callaghan has a story about pens, paper, and being the office's resident artist.
When I was 19, I worked in a call centre. It wasn't the shit sort where you had to call people up and sell things to them, but it was still pretty terrible. The computer would auto-dial a number for you, and you would call that house, and you'd ask to speak to someone there about a survey. And to make it random, you had to either speak to the person who answered the phone, or if it was a specific sort of survey, like one that had to have a person between a certain age or over a certain age, you had to try and find out if there was anyone like that in that household. Well, there was one survey that broke me where you had to call up a house and ask if there was anyone between the ages of 18 to 25. You then had to ask if they were willing to speak on the phone for 15 minutes. And if they were, you had to ask them if they smoked. And if they didn't, then you couldn't survey them. I had two responses one night in a 5-hour shift, and everyone was so impressed that I'd managed to find two people to talk to me. So that's the sort of job this was, where talking to two people in 5 hours was considered outstanding work. So there were lots of rules at this call centre. You weren't allowed to talk to the person next to you. You weren't allowed to do homework while you were talking on the phone. You weren't allowed to doodle. And this really got me. It's really hard to stay on the phone for a lot of hours without doodling or doing anything with your hands. I'd get there at 3 o'clock after a day of uni. I'd try and fail to talk to people. I'd get a break at 7:15, in which I'd add boiling water to a powdered cup of soup and drink it for dinner. That was the highlight of my evening. I'd keep calling people, and at about 9:30, when it stopped being appropriate to randomly ring strangers' houses, I'd stop and log out and go home for the night. So I thought I was a genius when I found a loophole in the no doodling rule. Nice arms, walking cat faces, cider, merry-go-rounds, lilies, jewels, I doodled with words. Teachers, Oprah picture books, the Blue Mountains, any mountains, ginger beer, big coats, pages and pages of tiny inky words. Floating candles, vanilla, parents, herb gardens, window boxes, the waifs, King Charles spaniels, winter, big sleep, big dinners, hats, crescent heads. All of them were meant to be things that make me happy. Sick days, typing in bed, echoes, cliffs, I thought bushwalks, everything on this list was dinner, awesome. Whitford, all of them Shelley were Beach, things that made me happy when I was 19. Insanely happy. Paper, I just moved to Melbourne, bongos, and everything guitars, was super exciting. St Kilda Beach, the Nightcat, Chapel Street Bazaar, Sydney Road, everything, Savings, Preston, ridiculous things, dumplings, Met cards. They all went on the list. Street, DeGrays, I'd forgotten about George most Park, of them. Grub Street. There's a terrible bar on the list. You used to have to walk up a broken escalator to get to it. If you did karaoke on a Sunday night, you got a free drink for every song you sung. It was a terrible bar, but it's on the list. I'd write this list and I'd be thinking about those things. I wouldn't be thinking about the fact that I wasn't talking to any other humans, and the ones I was talking to were hanging up on me. Meetings on Wednesdays, angry. Imagine conversations, Jacob lectures, Ballarat, breakfast, the sheer in bed, amount of things bed, tea in bed, that made me happy bed, sundown, when I was Paisley, 19 and the city was so smiles, new astounds me. Blowing out candles, New South Wales, the South Coast, vanilla shampoo. Some are obvious. Opinions, I'm still fond of them. Track, they're still things that I'd find preferable to a night of cup of soup and rejection. Pens, others are absurd. Mountains, they seem like in jokes with myself or codes that have to be cracked. I feel like I was meant to meet 19-year-old me somewhere and then forgot to turn up. Train tracks, champagne breakfasts. You can tell when it's approaching soup time at about 6:45 or 7 o'clock because the list turns into just a list of foods I like. Mee goreng, hoisin, mango chicken, barbecue chicken skin, sandwiches, potato gems, potato bake. Feta cheese is on the list 7 times. I thought it'd be fun to record the whole list for this story and maybe play it sped up, but it took about 20 minutes to record just half of it. It's weird to read the list now. Old loves, old jokes, old phrases. Things I used to say all the time that would make me laugh. Fewer things make me happier now. But the things that do make me really happy. I read through the list now and without even meaning to, I rearrange the columns. Things that still make me happy.
Lots of butter, days off, barbecue chicken skin, tiger balm, old diary.
Things I find repulsive now.
Pork cup, ballerina dress.
Things I'd forgot made me happy.
Waffles, towels that have been in the dryer. Descriptive language, smoky cape, foreign languages, text messages, 20-cent books, flakes, outdoor
and
heating.
Things that don't.
Joint bar, wine shows, drunken calls, Q&A, sanitizer, shoulder pads.
What makes you happy?
Solid wood furniture.
Neat handwriting.
A well-brewed cup of tea.
Cinnamon.
Solitude.
Getting a genuine compliment.
Friday nights.
Potato chips.
Boots. Amazing desserts that feature coconut.
Dusk on a warm day.
Could it fill up pages and pages?
Clean sheets.
Blush.
Swimming.
Sharing stories with my sisters that no one else.
Could you keep talking?
Most
really
musical.
Fast.
Text messages.
For a whole half hour.
Long holidays.
Sunday mornings.
New cities.
Could
Waking
you have?
Up with the sun.
Freckles. When you were 19.
Marshmallows.
Sex.
A sunny sky.
Kissing my children on their cheeks.
The beach.
Putting the input cord of a speaker on my finger so it buzzes.
Riding my bike really fast downhills while standing up on the pedals.
Floating in seawater.
Sisters.
The internet.
The best words written in the best order.
Massages.
Webcomics.
Family.
Running through trees and over bark mulched ground.
Wattle in the winter.
Making something original and awesome.
Seeing a morning after Pash goodbye at the bus stop.
Cheese platters.
Haircuts.
Dancing on my kitchen floorboards.
A fridge full of cheese.
Christmas trees.
Sleep-ins. My boyfriend's cat. Thick doonas. Soup. Holidays. Books. Quiet studios. Strong coffee. Early marks. Podcasts. Lots of butter. Making radio.
This episode of All the Best was produced at Syn Radio in Melbourne, in association with FBI Radio in Sydney and 4ZZZ in Brisbane. Thanks to all the producers who contributed to this episode, Pip Rasmussen, Millie McGrath and Gordon Leibowitz. Our features executive producers are Heidi Pett and Jess O'Callaghan. Our community coordinator is Pip Rasmussen. Our executive producer is Jordana Caputo. And I'm Michael Bryden. All the Best is played across Australia on the Community Radio Network and is made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation.
Another day. Plant in them. I wanna grow tomatoes.
seem to stand on my own two feet.